Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Mini Crush. How are you?
Are you talking to them or to me?
How's everybody?
I'm okay. My arm still hurts. It's been almost a month.
Yeah, I didn't check in, Noel.
That's
what's
okay,
the status?
Man. It's just like, you know, it's getting stronger by the day.
Okay.
For anyone that hasn't, you know, heard the backstory on this, I fell off one of those stupid electric scooters and banged my arm up pretty good, and it still hurts. Obviously,
you never went to a doctor.
No, I didn't go to the doctor.
So what are they going to do?
What are they going to do?
They'll say you hurt your arm, you hit your arm, don't ride scooters.
They'll say don't ride scooters. They'll say be a little smarter. Wise up, kid, is what they'll say. And
wise
that'll
up.
Hurt that'll hurt my feelings because my doctor is a 1930s mobster.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Let's unpack this a little bit.
Yep.
I want to hear a little bit more.
Yeah,
name the doctor,
okay.
But like what do you mean by that?
I mainly made it up entirely and I'm joking, but I'm sorry. I should have kept it going, shouldn't I?
Oh, no.
All of his instruments.
You'd be great at improv,
all
by
of
the
his,
way.
Yeah, that was a hard no and nothing. That was what that was. No, he keeps all his instruments in a violin case. He wears a fedora kind of cocked to the side, you know?
Late.
And yeah.
Well, you did talk about taking improv classes.
It's definitely on
you know
my
what
list.
They say on the
what?
First day is.
What's that?
If you say something funny and someone says, oh, yeah, tell me more about it, don't say, oh, no, I just made it all up.
Yeah, they do say that. That's definitely improv 101.
101.
Yeah.
All right, Noel, we're going to start because we got some requests for another edition of Grip This.
Mm.
It's been a while. And this week, Noel, I'm going to go for body doubles, stunt doubles, and stand-ins.
Nice.
Those are three different things.
Yeah.
And some people might not fully understand what all these roles mean and what they do. So here's Chuck's version. So a body double is, you know what a body double is, right?
Well, I know what it is in terms of like a political figure who has like a body double that they, you know, have standing in for them at events and stuff like Saddam Hussein.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Like in other countries, they'll have like a fake Saddam.
Yeah. And also like Stalin famously had one. Well, it's okay. Also to like confuse people and throw them off the trail of the real one. So they'll send the body double one to one location while the real one is somewhere else and it keeps the heat off of the real one.
All right. Well, that's not how it works in movies.
No. I've never understood the difference between these three things except for the stunt. But what is a body double?
So a body double in a movie is when there is a body part usually that isn't quite right on the real actor and they use someone else.
Oh.
So most often it's used for like a nude scene.
Uh-huh.
So an actor.
Someone's got a weird looking penis.
Not even weird looking, but. An actor will usually how it works is an actor will not want to do a nude scene. So like maybe if it's a young woman, she'd be like, no, I'm not doing a nude scene.
Right.
So they will body double her. And it's very obvious because, you know, you see just the body.
Just the body.
Like from the neck down.
Mm-hmm.
But also it could be like, you know, if you need the lead actor has to grab the sword from the stone.
Right.
And it turns out he's got little like baby hands.
Right.
Then they will get in some big burly man hand to grab the sword and just do the insert shot of the hand.
This is really helpful. This makes a lot of sense.
Sometimes it's used when, like, we need a shot of the actor picking up the cup of coffee, but, like, we don't want to pay Morgan Freeman to come in and do just that.
They'll do that. That's like a whole series of pickup shots they'll do as well.
Yeah, they'll
like
use
on a different
like
day.
I've
heard about this
to do that and save money and stuff.
I had
like
a
that.
Pal who's an assistant director, and she would tell me about how, like, they would literally do whole days of insert shots like that with somebody else.
Yeah.
So they could like, keep things moving to just the action.
Sure. You don't pay George Clooney his rate to come in
cups.
There and pick up a coffee cup.
That's right.
So that's basically what a body double is. There's all sorts of ways you can use them, but it's generally just when you want to shoot another part of a body for whatever reason than the actors.
Mm-hmm.
Stunt doubles, Noel. You know what a stunt double is.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's someone who has the same build and often a similar enough face that from far away shots they could pass for the real one. But it's the person who actually does the scary, dangerous stunts.
Yeah, and there's a bit of a thing. There can be just like a stunt person who does like some really big stunt, like a big fall from a window or a huge something that requires a lot of expertise. And they don't always have to look as much like the actor if they can costume them up and wig them up to the point where, like you said, from whatever angle or from far away, they can pass for it. But a true stunt double-double is these are the people that do look a lot like the actor and are sized similarly and will do, like, the fighting scenes mm-hmm. and stuff that's a little more close up than, like, someone who jumps off a building onto an airbag.
Totally. There was a meme that was both. Going around with side-by-side shots of, like, what's her name?
Captain Marvel?
Captain Marvel. No.
I saw that one.
Oh, there was another one, though, with, like, the bride, Uma Thurman,
uh-huh.
and then the woman who is her lifelong stunt double, and she was actually in Death Proof.
Sure. It's
she's Australian, I want to say.
I can't think of her name.
Yeah, I can't think of it. But it also had some other ones. I believe it was Hugh Jackman, and they all looked very, very, very similar, had the same haircut, same, you know, style and everything. But then there was a picture of Jackie Chan just by himself.
Because okay, I did see that.
It's a gag because he does his own stunts. As does Keanu Reeves, man, in those John Wick movies.
I finally saw the third one, by the way.
What was it? Was it good?
It was great.
It's just like sensory overload, I've heard.
So
it's just
good,
like
man.
Bonkers mayhem, right?
I really enjoy those films.
I do too.
Zoe Bell, by the way.
Zoe Bell.
Shout out to her.
Yep.
But yeah, so a stunt double is a lot of times an actor will take this double throughout their career. Or at least through a bunch of movies. But if they land on someone that's really good and looks like them and can do their thing, you might see someone work with the same stunt double for many, many films or their whole career. And the actor will get them work. And in fact, we might as well just say this since we're on it. A lot of times actors, Noel, if they're big enough, will have their own stylist and their own wardrobe person that travels with them from movie to movie as well. And they are hired at the premium rate.
Right.
And they're called their personal.
It's at the request of the actor probably too.
Yeah,
it's a
like
comfort
I've got
level.
My personals.
Like, this is my
they always yep. do my movies. Mm-hmm. They know how to do my hair right and my makeup right.
Right.
And they're comfortable with them personally.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to be assigned just whoever on the crew.
I wonder if that ever becomes a clash where like maybe,
I'm sure it happens.
Maybe the production team or the director is like, we need to go, yeah. we're going to go a little different direction in this one, you know?
Yeah, I knew someone who was... my old friend Mitzi was Jennifer Lopez's personal stylist for a while for wardrobe.
I have heard J-Lo is a little bit
You know,
tricky.
She actually said the opposite because
really?
I was like, oh, I've heard stories. And she was like, she's really nice, actually. And a lot
right
of that
on.
Is blown out of proportion.
Okay, well, that's nice to clear the air on that one.
Yeah. But, I mean, this was her opinion, of course. But she worked closely with her. I'll
sure.
say that.
Sure. What about a stand-in? I think I know what a stand-in is. It's to catch the light. It's like so that the actor doesn't have to actually be in there while
that's
they're
right.
adjusting marks and lighting and things, right?
Right. Exactly right, Noel. So a stand-in, what happens is usually on set is what happens is they will bring in the actors for a run-through, the real
mm-hmm.
actors,
mm-hmm.
and they will kind of run through the scene and block it. And mm-hmm. blocking me, you know what this is,
yep.
but blocking is like you're going to stand here, here, here. The camera person puts down tape marks on the floor because you can't just willy-nilly light things.
No.
It's very exact.
Not to mention it has to sync up with the way the camera moves.
All
everything's
that stuff.
A dance, you know, like
yeah.
for sure. Yeah.
So you will get your blocking done, do your little run-through with the director, and then they say they will dismiss the actors for what they call last looks,
mm-hmm.
which is go back to hair and makeup just to make sure you're all ready. Go make sure your fly is zipped up and your wardrobe looks just right.
Yep.
And during last looks is when the grips and the electricians and the camera department were really finally set their equipment. And they do that with the help of a stand-in.
Mm-hmm.
And the stand-in doesn't really have to look like the actor, but they should be similarly sized.
Similar height. Yep.
Similar colored,
mm-hmm.
Like hair and skin tone usually.
That's right, yeah.
Like you wouldn't hire like a tall African-American to play Elijah – to stand in for Elijah Wood.
That's right.
Let's say. But they don't have to, like, facially look as much like them as, like, a double.
And I would say, realistically, a stand-in is probably also an aspiring actor or possibly an extra they just pull out
like, for sure.
from the fray and say, hey, you're good enough to be the stand-in.
Yeah, but a stand-in can also travel with an actor as well and be used, like, on multiple films.
Okay.
And again, if it's they like someone and they do a good job, you know, stand-in and extras. If you're doing a good job, that means you're keeping your mouth shut and you're just doing what you're told.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of sucks to say that.
Well.
But the worst extras are the ones that have too many questions and too many needs.
No. You stay in your lane. You're
stay
an
in your lane.
Yeah.
And really pro extras in California know that shit. And they know just to, like, get their work done.
And they know when to emote and when to not overdo it, you know, like
yeah.
what the scene calls for. Because being a professional extra, I mean, it's not – just standing around like a turd. You got to do all kinds of stuff.
I don't know if everyone realizes this. In a big dinner party or a restaurant scene, no one else is talking. When it looks like everyone else is laughing and talking and you hear that, that's all audio soundtrack stuff.
Exactly.
Everyone is fake talking.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to do because I was an extra a couple of times. My brother got me on some jobs. It's not easy.
And that also probably makes it easier for the real actors to not get distracted or whatever, you know, to make sure that they can
don't get in their eye line,
their
don't
exactly.
like stare at Jennifer Lopez when she walks in.
Mm-mm.
Like, be a pro.
Totally.
And there's a great part. I might have mentioned this before, but in the movie Pollock, the great Ed Harris, in the director's commentary, there's one party scene where the camera's going by and there's this extra that's just way overdoing it.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed Harris, who seems kind of cranky anyway, just goes, "Oh, that fucking extra." Guy's hamming it up.
Oh
man, so good. All right, Noel, guess what's next?
I couldn't possibly.
Haiku Theater, Noel.
Yes, my favorite.
It's been a while. I realized we've been getting the haikus, the short shrift.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a Haiku Theater action movie edition, and I had people, and we'll see if they follow directions well. Geez, Noel, we have 250 haikus. That's pretty good.
That's very good. Good haul. Good
haiku haul. We don't. We have 107.
But still pretty respectable.
Yeah, and you know we've got a whole series of haikus because I'm just leaving these up now, so we can draw from this well for months to come.
We're actually working on a haiku coffee table book with all of this stuff, and you will each get your residual check of $1.
That's right.
That's too much for a haiku. How about
50 cents?
1 cent.
1 cent.
Yeah.
All right. Action movie edition, everyone. We're going to start with J.J. Verbino, one of our old pals. Kill Bill Volume 2. Pai Mei taught kiddo, Texas funeral escape, exploding heart shot.
Love it.
Our old pal Robe, Rebecca Robe, who was doing great, by the way, says, this is King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. Don't know that movie.
Was that the most recent one that Guy Ritchie did?
Maybe.
He did a very poorly reviewed King Arthur movie. Pretty recently. But
Here's my dirty secret, Noel.
What's that?
I think Guy Ritchie kind of sucks.
Well, he's definitely sucked for a long time.
I just don't.
I enjoyed Snatch. I thought Snatch was fun.
I'm trying to remember back. I guess I might have liked Lock, Stock, and Snatch. Maybe.
Those are the only two that I ever liked. He did a bunch of weird ones after that. Like he did like Castaway movie with Madonna that was supposed to be ungodly.
And I did not see those Sherlock Holmes movies, so maybe they're good, but I didn't see them.
He did the most recent Aladdin movie. It's in theaters right now that everyone says is a childhood killer. So.
Yeah. So our old pal Robe says, Studley Chuck Hunman, talking about Charlie Hunman.
Okay.
Eric Bana and Elephants, Jude Law is an ass.
True that.
All right.
Jude Law does tend to play like kind of a cocky little shit, doesn't he?
Yeah. You know Emily's story about Jude Law.
No.
That she, and this is kind of funny because she told me this story many, many years ago. She was like, you know, Jude Law asked for my number when I was in high school. It's like, what? She was on tour in England with her show choir and went to the Hard Rock Cafe, London. And she said Jude Law was the bartender. And we were talking and talking, and he asked for my phone number at the end. And I was like, this sounds very suspect.
Mm-hmm.
Not that Jude Law would ask for a phone number, but just...
The
whole scenario seems very outlandish. She dug through her photos from her trip in a box in the corner, pulled out a photo of fucking Jude Law in his Hard Rock Cafe shirt.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, that's straight up 100% true.
That's amazing.
Pretty amazing, though. Mm-hmm. But I got her, Jude.
Yeah, you did.
Back off. Jeff Clark, our old pal, says the movie Free Fire. Don't know it. Charlito Copley, too late now, I'm offended, Brie Larson in jeans. I don't know that movie.
Don't know either, but sounds kind of dull, actually. If the highlight, the punchline of the haiku is Brie Larson in jeans, I don't think I'm interested.
Our old pal Vanessa Lopez does The Matrix. Red pill or blue pill, just follow the white rabbit. Whoa. I know kung fu.
course.
That's a good one. Good job, Vanessa.
That's The Matrix 2, right?
No, I know Kung Fu was 1, right?
I'm just kidding.
Oh, okay.
Just back on my trip from the last episode we did.
You know, me and Maddie Frederick are going to do The Matrix in here.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Old Maddie. Good boy, Maddie.
All right, TJ Danny for Mad Max Fury Road says this. Time to just relax and enjoy a nice movie. JK, acid trip. JK,
very
acid
cool.
trip. Yep,
very psychedelic, that movie. Very psychedelic.
Our old friend Dylan Thomas, he always comes out of the woodwork with the poetry. No surprise.
Yeah, he's a fantastic poet.
The Expendables. Old action stars in a film that's basically one big explosion. I didn't see that, did you?
I saw the first one.
Yeah.
There were at least one more, maybe two more.
I didn't see it. I got to say, it was a pretty interesting idea to put together like all the biggest action heroes.
Yeah, they just doubled down on the second one. I think they added some
extras, more people.
Like Bruce Willis, I think, is in the second one. I know Dolph Lundgren is in maybe all of them, but he's definitely in the second one.
Oh. All right. Our old friend Cubes, Don Kuby. Mm-hmm. She does the movie Speed and all. The bus couldn't stop. Otherwise, it would explode. He shoots the hostage. Pretty straightforward.
Which hostage did he shoot?
Well, remember, that was the whole thing. Like, whether or not you were going to shoot the hostage. That was the sort of...
Oh, yes.
The big incident at the beginning.
He shot
Jeff Daniels.
That's right.
In the leg, right?
Yeah.
That's why he ended up pushing paper.
Oh, duh. Yeah, of course. Exactly. Yes, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Megan Carroll, our old friend, as Pirates of the Caribbean. Sea, ships, lots of swords, unnecessary sequels. Why is the rum gone?
I like it. I have to raise a question here, Chuck. You say Caribbean? Some say Caribbean.
What do you say?
I say Caribbean, but Caribbean is like Caribbean Queen, like the Billy Ocean song.
It's not sharing the same dream.
Yeah.
No more love on the run, no.
But a lot of times people say Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, as opposed to Pirates of the Caribbean.
I'd say Pirates of the Caribbean. I think I'd say Pirates of the Caribbean.
Okay. I think you said Caribbean.
Did I say Caribbean?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't think either is right or wrong. It's just more of a taste, personal taste thing.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to see which side we fall on. Let us know. Which side do you fall on?
Well, what's interesting, though, is I think I say Pirates of the Caribbean, but I think I would go visit the Caribbean.
Exactly.
What's that all about?
It's – no one knows. It's just one of those things.
Our old pal Alec Glasnovich says this. Chuck and Noel, you know – it's not D.C. when I say, this is Bat Country. Oh, okay. Do you know what that is?
Well, I mean, it's not D.C.?
I don't quite get that one.
Is he implying like a Batman connection because of D.C. comics? But then
no,
Bat Country is Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
That's what he's talking about.
What does D.C. mean? What's the D.C. reference in there?
I don't know.
It's okay.
Not D.C. when I say... I don't know.
I don't.
Right, that has nothing to do with the movie, and it's just a...
Let us know. Give
right.
us a little clarification.
All right, the movie Volcano from Lauren Mantle. La Cienega burns brightly in lava flows, Mount Wilshire alive.
Nice. I assume this movie is about a volcano that erupts in Los Angeles.
Yeah, you didn't see that one?
No.
Yeah.
Which volcano would this be?
I believe Volcano had Tommy Lee Jones and Anne Heche,
uh-huh.
if I'm not mistaken.
Got it. But this is an imaginary volcano. Is there potentially an active volcano in Los Angeles?
No, it was a real volcano.
Oh, really?
It was not a movie about an imaginary volcano.
Okay.
No.
But no, I mean in real life, Chuck, which volcano might this have been?
I think it had to do with the La Brea Tar Pits.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
I was wondering
if I'm not
that.
Mistaken. Mm-hmm. Which is always a fun visit, by the way.
It is, and it really smells like fresh paving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty
it's
neat.
It's got the cool, like the mammoth and the mammoth baby. That's stuck
yeah,
in there.
It's
you know?
So sad.
Uh-huh.
They break your heart
really
before
does.
You even walk in the door.
It's true.
I think I told the story once, but you know, there's the big tar pit, but there's tar like
there's
sort of
ones.
Around.
Huh?
Because we were shooting a job there, and I was a PA, and I was just standing sort of off to the side in the grass, and I looked down, and there was little bubbly tar about 8 inches wide, just a little bitty tar bubbles.
Even the little ones, though, they cordon off usually.
Oh, really?
Like they have little, you know. Like
this one was not.
Yeah, yeah,
cordoned.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Mm.
there's a medium-sized one, and then there's some smaller ones. But even some of the smaller ones have little square boxes around them.
Interesting. Yeah, this one was – I would describe it as tinnitus.
Got it.
Our old pal Louis Silva for the movie Rocky. I don't know if that's an action movie, but we'll count it. You're a bum, Rocky. The champ's giving you a shot. Adrian loves you.
Who called him a bum?
Well,
was it the trainer?
Mickey certainly said the word bum a lot.
Yeah.
I don't remember him calling Rocky a bum, but he very well might have.
Maybe.
All right, Noel from Commando, our old pal Gary M. Strange. Do you remember I said I would kill you last? Well, my friend, I lied.
Ah, snap. Arnie, I haven't seen Commando.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Oh, boy. I mean,
I bet it's a lot of fun.
If you want to take a nostalgia trip down mid 1980s action, Arnie,
I think I do.
Commando is kind of the best one. A lot of great Arnie one-liners.
One-liners.
I mean, if you consider those great,
I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he kind of goes over the top with Commando. Jeffrey Fleming, I think he's an old friend, for the movie Zorro, masked bandit in black gets revenge for dead brother. Zorro saves the day.
Huzzah.
Baird William Swedman does Point Break. Johnny Utah said, I'm an FBI agent. I'm fucking surfing.
Should pair that with I Know Kung Fu. He's got a lot of those kind of like real dumb kind of one-liners, doesn't he?
Sure.
It's sort of his thing.
Yeah, it's great though.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Barry King, our old friend for Jurassic Park, says this. We have a T-Rex. Welcome to Jurassic Park. Hold on to your butts. That's my Sam Jackson.
That's pretty good.
Motherfuckers.
Yeah, of course.
All right. How much time do we have? Let's do a couple more.
Yeah.
Let me see here. Hot Fuzz is the movie, Noel. And our old friend Rob Johnson says this. Village of the Year, Hooded Killer on the Loose, for the greater good. Good movie.
Very good. I haven't seen him in a long time, but that's part of his little trilogy, right? He's got Shaun of the Dead.
Hot Fuzz,
and then The End of the World, or what's it called?
Oh, yeah.
The World's End.
The World's End,
yeah.
That was good.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, we're going to finish with Top Gun and John Shaw requesting flyby. Let the man have his coffee. The pattern is full. All right. Not bad, everyone. Not bad. All right, Noel, you know what I'm going to finish with today?
Do tell.
We're going to do about 10 minutes of Up With Fuck.
Yes. Love Ramsey's sound design for this bit.
So I think I lost the original one and reposted last night. So these are all new fucks, everyone. And here we go. Francesca Marie says this from Empire Records. Stop calling me Warren. My name isn't fucking Warren. Not bad. Got a lot of uplikes for that. That's a beloved movie in certain circles. Did you ever see that one? Empire Records?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. With Rex Manning.
Yeah.
Isn't he like is he a DJ or he's like a big star? He's like a big...
I think a big star. Yeah, big singing star or something.
He's a singing star.
It's
been a while. Liv Tyler, I thought, was very fetching in that sweater.
Well, Noel, I will say this. I had and I guess continue to have, a big fat crush on Liv Tyler.
Totally. All those Aerosmith videos.
She just is very pretty.
She's got a way about her.
Has a way.
Mm-hmm.
And very talented. You don't see
absolutely.
Her enough.
No, you don't.
I think she took a little time off. Vanessa Lopez, our old friend, says this, and this is one of my favorites as well, Vanessa. Harvey Keitel is the wolf in Pulp Fiction. Pretty please, with sugar on top. Clean the fucking car.
That's great.
I haven't seen that in a while. I have that reserved for Jack O'Brien. He called dibs on Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to make that happen at some point.
How stoked are you about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? Have you seen the full-length trailers for that?
I have, and now I want to know nothing more.
Yeah.
I want to just shut
same.
It down.
I see. Yeah.
But that does go back to our previous conversation, because that movie, a lot of it is the relationship between an actor and his stunt double.
His stunt double,
who
right.
he has through his career.
I heard a really interesting interview with Timothy Oliphant, who I love, who was apparently really good friends with Conan O'Brien. He was on his podcast, and it's a great interview.
But oh, nice.
This is from something different. Timothy Oliphant, and you probably know this, Tarantino allows no phones on his set.
Did not know that.
Like, as a huge, huge, like, rule.
Yeah.
Like, they have a tent set up where you check your phone in before you go on set.
That's
great. And it's not even because of
leaks.
It's to create an environment where everyone is undistracted and there to make something together, you know?
Yes, Noel.
I think it's huge.
I went to the pool. Just let me soapbox it for one second. I went to the pool at my in-law's house with my family on Father's Day. Happy Father's Day, by the way.
Hey, thanks. You too, man.
And both fucking lifeguards sitting in their chairs staring at their phones. Mm. Can you believe that?
That's
a liability.
That's a big time liability. Yeah.
And it's just like, I finally, we said something. Because I was like, that's just not, like, that's not only not cool, it's a liability.
Mm-hmm.
And like, there's no reason. Because I lifeguarded, so I it was an impersonal affront to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
No reason to have your phone in a chair. You shouldn't even have it.
No.
You should check it in when you go to work.
I agree.
And on your break, look at your fucking phone, but don't sit in a lifeguard chair.
Well, that's crazy because, like, the lifeguards at Whitewater, which is like a local water park here in Atlanta, they do this really unsettling thing where they scan their field of vision, like with their heads fully turning,
like
from left
robots.
To right. And it's they do it every so often, and it's very strange to witness.
Uh-huh.
But like that's the level of attention you're supposed to be doing as a lifeguard.
Especially at a place like that. I mean, you got to really be watching.
Well, that's the point. It was in like the wave pool, you know? Like, so, you know,
because a kid, man.
They just go down.
Josh and I did a show on drowning. Like drowning does not often look like drowning.
No.
It's very silent and sometimes not splashy. And like.
Agreed.
You got to fucking watch.
Totally. Yeah, so.
All right, off my soapbox. All lifeguards, get off your phones. Jimmy Mallory from the movie The Ringer. When the fuck did we get ice cream? I haven't seen that movie.
The Ringer. I don't know The Ringer.
You don't?
No.
Who was that?
I have no idea.
The Ringer? Why don't I know that?
It comes right up. Let's see. It looks to be a sports
movie. Oh, yeah. I did
movie.
Not see that.
Johnny
that
Knoxville.
Yeah, that was the Johnny Knoxville movie.
Yeah. He's
I
really.
Believe that's probably not a movie you can make today. I believe he fakes his way into the Special Olympics or something.
Oh, no. Not okay.
Yeah. That movie smacks of 2005.
It sure does. And it came out in 2005. And it cost $20 million. And it made $40.4 million at the box office, so quite a success. And Mark Mothersbaugh did the music, which is interesting.
Yeah.
He'll do whatever you pay him to do.
I got a gut feeling. I got a gut feeling.
So good.
Ruby loves Devo.
Oh, they're fantastic.
Yeah, good stuff.
Really good.
Our oldest pal, Rebecca Robe, says this from Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, which she says, so many great fucks in that movie. You're carrying a wasted girl in a bag of fertilizer, yeah? Yeah. You don't look like your average horticulturist. Not bad. I like inserting the fuck in between, in the middle of a word. That's always a good move. This is classic, of course, but Gabriel Ferrer, the dinner scene in Goodfellas, the what the fuck is so funny about me? Certainly a lot of good F-bombs in that scene. One of the classic classics. Well, you know what? Clement Scott also chimes in with The Ringer. When the fuck did we get ice cream? Apparently that's the line of the movie.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Do not recall the existence of that movie at all.
I don't either. Jeff Clark, our old pal. I've had it with these motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane.
Yeah, that was from The Color Purple, right?
I think you're right.
Okay, cool.
Beth Landers, The Thing, you got to be fucking kidding me. As the dude's head pulls away, grows spider legs, and scurries away. But I think it was more like, you got to be fucking kidding me. That's a bad line reading. I'm no actor, everyone. All right, let's do a few more of these. All right, here's your old pal, Dennis Quaid. Noel.
Yeah, I'm on a text thread with him that he never responded to. Really was crushing for me.
You have Dennis Quaid's phone number?
I do.
Wow. It's a power move.
It's been a very useless power move.
It's funny, at Max FunCon this past year, and it was relevant to the conversation, but we did a thing where, like, who's the most famous person in your phone? And I was like, well, you know, mine is all you guys.
Right.
It's like Hodgman. Uh-huh. Or maybe not. I don't know who the most famous person in my phone is. Ira Glass.
You got Ira's number?
Yeah.
Nice.
Or Mark Maron.
Oh, okay. That's pretty good. Pretty solid.
It's about as big as it gets, I think.
Ira's kind of a big deal, dude.
No, he's a huge deal. But I had no, like, I was no match for these people.
Yeah, well, I got Dennis Quaid, baby.
Dennis Quaid, that's up there. But we prank texted Winona Ryder when we were all drunk from someone else's phone.
Oh, I bet she's a good sport. I bet she has a good time. Yes.
You think?
Yes.
I'm not sure about that.
You don't know?
I don't know.
She's a little neurotic?
I don't know.
She seems fun.
Okay. I don't know, Noel. That's all I'm going to say.
Fair. That's totally fair.
Well, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I don't even know what "we'll see" means.
Like, well, you haven't. Obviously, she did not respond, or else you would have had a story about the back end of
that.
She
didn't respond. I'm wondering if there ever is going to be a back end of that text. She probably just ignored it.
Probably so.
All right. So, Bennett Duckworth, our old pal, about Dennis Quaid in the Todd Haynes movie Far From Heaven. Great film. I just want to get this fucking thing over with. So simple, yet it has a stunning effect, since the entire movie is capturing the tone of 50s era melodrama where such words did not exist. So Bennett kind of laid a heavy one on us. You know, most of these are fun, but that was very meaningful.
Yikes. Not yikes. I just mean, I don't know what I mean. Meaningful. That's what I mean.
A lot of people are just putting videos up.
That's fun. Should have more clips.
What, do a clip show?
Yeah, do a clip show.
I don't know about that, Noel.
It's fair use, man. We're talking about the fact that they said fuck, and we can just have it play.
Mike Blake from the Blues Brothers. You'd look pretty stupid eating corn off the cob with no fucking teeth.
Interesting. There's a lot to unpack there.
Good movie.
Corn off the cob?
Corn on the cob. Did I say corn off the cob?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're eating the corn off the cob.
Yeah, technically, that is true.
Yeah.
You know what's funny, Noel? When I was missing my front tooth and I ate corn on the cob and off the cob, there was a little line all the way around where that front tooth would not get that row of corn. So I had single little rings of corn all around my cob. That's what they don't tell you when you lose a tooth.
No, they don't.
You're going to have little rings of corn.
My kid lost a giant molar over the weekend. She was eating like a chewy candy thing, and then this big old molar popped right out. She wasn't even expecting it.
Really?
She's at that age where she's almost through losing all the baby teeth. But
right.
Occasionally it'll happen.
Boy, I forgot about teeth. When does that start? When do you lose teeth?
Oh, gosh. When did it start? I mean, I would say 5. I don't know.
Wow. So we're getting there.
No. Maybe later than that. Does it take – how long does it take to lose all your baby teeth? I have no idea, Chuck.
I forget all that stuff.
I do too, and I've been through it. So
I remember when I lost my front teeth the first time when I was a child. Nick Kelly from the movie The Edge, Anthony Hopkins, says this: "We're going to kill the motherfucker," when he's talking about the bear. That's a bit of a guilty pleasure for me. Or is that considered a guilty pleasure?
The Edge?
Yeah.
With
Alec Baldwin and
Elle McPherson. Does she play the bear?
She does.
No, it's Alec Baldwin and Anthony Hopkins, right?
Yeah, and Elle McPherson. She plays the lady.
Got it. Who plays the bear?
I believe, I don't know.
Is it Meryl Streep?
I think so.
Okay. She was great in the new Godzilla movie as Mothra.
Did you see that?
Yeah, it sucks.
Oh, that's right. But didn't you say it at least had some good monster action?
Yeah, it's got some fine monster action, but it's like it tries to surround it with all this like fake story that is just absolutely absurd and just boring, and none of the characters do anything that makes sense, and it's just not worth it. Like, there's a couple of good monster fights, but I fell asleep several times.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. You're a movie sleeper, Noel.
I'm a bit of a movie sleeper, Chuck.
Because that's several times now you've said you fell asleep during a movie.
Yeah. I'm not proud of it, but it's a thing that happens. That's why I don't go to late movies.
Mm-hmm.
I struggle, Chuck, if I go to a late movie.
I hear you. Struggle is real. Our old friend Gary Teague from Pulp Fiction: "If any of you fucking pricks move,
And I'll execute every motherfucking last one of you. You know what's funny is, like, I had the soundtrack to Pulp Fiction before I ever saw the movie, and that's how the soundtrack opens up. The soundtrack, you know, he always had little clips from the movie.
Yeah.
And that's the very first thing you hear on the soundtrack.
That's right.
And then it goes right into
Dick Dale.
Yeah, exactly.
R.I.P. I saw Dick Dale live.
He just recently passed, right?
I think in the last year or two.
Because he would always come and do shows at the Earl. Like, he would tour in his car, I think, and like didn't make a lot of money.
I saw him play in Athens. It was great. Dick Dale was very famous for using, fucking piano wire, basically. It was the heaviest gauge string you can get on a guitar.
Really?
Yeah, because he just wails on it.
Yeah, that's
you know?
True. That's
and
true.
He just needs something strong.
That's cool.
All right, let's finish this up with Tim Robertson, our old pal, says this from Coming to America when they walk in front of the taxi. Halt! You dumb fuck! What does dumb fuck mean? That's pretty good.
That's good.
Funny movie. They're doing a sequel to that, Noel.
Oh, really? A sequel?
Yeah.
With everyone, all the originals are signed on, you think?
I believe we have James Earl Jones, Eddie Murphy, and Arsenio Hall. And I think the plot, of course, is Eddie Murphy's son now wants to go to America or something like that, which is what you do in the sequel.
Seems suspect.
Like many years later.
Seems suspect, Chuck.
It's a little worrisome because, like, is there any way to make that movie as good as Coming to America was?
No.
Is it just going to be a big fat disappointment?
Why does Eddie Murphy not do anything good ever anymore?
Well, you know what I've said for a while is Eddie Murphy should go back and get an hour of stand-up together.
Yeah, like something really good.
And go back to his roots and what made him funny.
Or I'd love to see him cast interestingly and then like something, you know, sort of like the way Adam Sandler was used in Punch Drunk Love or something like that. Like I'd love to see Eddie Murphy in something really intense.
Yeah, I mean he tried to do that, I believe, when he did Dreamgirls. Showed a different side. He got nominated for an Academy Award. Did not
that's
win.
Right, that's
and I think
right.
he was very salty about losing that award.
Yeah.
I think he thought he was going to win. And I think he tried to do one recently that was a full-on drama that did not do well at all. So,
okay, there you go. So he has attempted it.
Well, what I'm afraid of is that he's attempted this with the wrong material. Here's what he should do, Noel. He's doing this serious movie that's still some big Hollywood attempt at something.
Right.
What he needs to do is get some young indie director to write him a real gritty, down-to-earth gritty role.
That's what I'm saying.
And
yeah,
make
exactly.
It, like, don't do the Hollywood version of that because it's still going to suck. He's so insulated in his bubble. He has no – you can't get to Eddie.
Yeah,
no, you
yeah.
can't get to Eddie Murphy with an independent film.
That's true.
I think a lot of people should do that. I'd love to see Tom Hanks star in an indie film. I had a movie idea a while back for Chevy Chase because he plays piano to have his big comeback film be Chevy Chase as a down on his luck, sad sack jazz piano player, but sort of mirror Chevy Chase's life, if you know what I mean, but through the lens of a jazz piano player.
That'd be pretty cool. He just seems like he's, I don't know, he seems like a real pill.
Prick?
Yeah.
He's supposed to be.
Yeah.
That was always the line on Chevy Chase. Not a fun guy. Mm-hmm. So, Noel, we should make these movies.
I agree. I'm game.
Sharknado. I had that idea.
Yeah.
Stole that one.
Well, it's just parallel thinking, Chuck.
I know, parallel thinking. All right, I got nothing else, Noel.
I don't either.
You want to sign off with your favorite F-bomb or just in life? What's your favorite way to use it?
I don't know, like sort of as a comma, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Fucking... Whatever, fucking, this fucking, you know, I don't know. It's pretty lazy use of it, honestly.
No, I'm lazy with it, and I drop a lot of F-bombs, but I think the term fucked up is pretty great.
Fucked up is good. Like, that was fucked up. That was fucked up.
Goodbye, everyone.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.